a good move. Why don't you dance him?
Dancing is forbidden. Dancing is forbidden. Dancing is forbidden.
Yoo-hoo, running crew, welcome to Dancing is Forbidden. I am Ronnie, lifelong fan of and one-time voice on Aqua Teen Hunger Force, and on this dang old podcast, we are watching through and talking about every dang old Aqua Teen episode, one dang old episode at a time, and the dang old episode we are watching through and talking about this week is Season 4, Episode 11, Antenna.
Here are your 40 Yorlocks. Use them wisely.
On George Lowe's autograph.
You can get two for that.
Or a sketch and a handjob.
Antenna making its television debut on December 10th, 2006. The logline for Antenna is, Carl endangers the planet when he accepts money to maintain an alien antenna. And look, a big aspect of this episode, for me at least, is the guest stars on this one. We have Mike Judge showing up here, hence, you know, my little Boomhauer homage at the beginning of this podcast episode. Will Forte is here, and the godfather of Adult Swim himself, George Lowe, is showing up, and you could argue he's stealing the show. This one is jam-packed with some great voice talent, and this episode, I'm sure I saw it at some point back in the day, but I really have no memories of this one until starting the podcast at some point and realizing Mike Judge was on an episode of Aqua Teen and rushing to go watch it. So not a whole lot of history here for me on this one, but it's a great episode nonetheless. So excited to get into it, but as always, before we can do that, we've got some other stuff to talk about first. First up this week, our Aqua Teen news. And news do I have for you. You heard of YouTube? Because there's a new video up on there with Dave Willis, Dana Snyder, Carrie Means, and MC Chris. They're doing an Aqua Teen panel. So that's up there. It's about 30 minutes. You could watch it right now. Well, not right now. Listen to the podcast first. But you could listen. You could watch that later. I would suggest you do so. It's a fun time. Link to that in the description. And those same fellas, Dana, Dave, Carrie, and MC Chris, they will be in Richmond, Virginia on Saturday, March 16th for another panel at some sort of convention. I think it's GalaxyCon. So again, that is Richmond, Virginia on Saturday, March 16th. Be there or be square. I guess I'm a square because I'm not going to be there. But if you can go, do it. Kind of cool to see this group of guys traveling around, hitting up these conventions, and sharing the holy word of Aqua Teen to everybody. It's like a traveling church or something like that, but it's, you know, these main Aqua Teen voice actors. So, moving on from that, I want to shout out Aqua Teen producer and editor, a fundamental person to Aqua Teen Hunger Force, Mr. J. Wade Edwards. He got to go on his favorite podcast, called Effectively Wild. Now, it's a sports podcast, but if you like baseball, check it out. Jay, he knows his stuff. It's a good listen. Link to that in the description as well. Congrats to Jay. I got to go on my favorite podcast, Roach Coach, last year, so I know what it's like to get to have an interactive podcast experience. It's almost like you're listening to your favorite podcast, but you get to say stuff, and the podcasters say stuff back. And speaking of sports, I want to give a bit of a disclaimer to our previous episode, Bart Oates, which is about football, and nobody said anything to me, but I was kind of, I was dogging sports in that episode a little bit, organized sports, but I do want to say, I did watch the most recent Super Bowl. I saw Usher jumping around the stage, having a good time. I watched the commercials, and best of all, I watched that overtime bullcrap. And it was pretty fun. To sports' credit, obviously I'm not the biggest sports head in the universe, but I do appreciate the way that sports is like the last remaining thing on TV that is truly like you don't know what you're going to see. You don't know what's going to happen. It's not planned out ahead of time. Now, surely there could be like people throwing games or something like that, but for the most part, I do appreciate that about sports. So I didn't want you to think I was putting you down. If you're a hut-hut hiker football fan, if you're an ice hog skating around on the hockey rink, whatever your sport of choice, I support it. I just don't want to watch it. Unless you got Usher on the stage, then I'll probably watch it. So, wanted to give that little disclaimer because I didn't think I was completely fair there. So moving on, we have some listener feedback, and this is a listener that you're going to know.
Hey, boy, I just discovered your podcast, and I'm loving every minute of it with all the pop culture references and whatnot. Keep up the good work, Ronnie.
Oh, my God. I can't believe it. Meatwad himself left us a message. Meatwad, he likes that I'm talking about him, and he likes I'm talking about the pop culture back from when he was doing these TV episodes. Thank you, Meatwad. I couldn't do this without you. I wouldn't be here without you. I love you. Now, this week I was going to skip our pop culture segment of the week that Antenna came out back in 2006. I said I'm done with it. I'm done with this pop culture bullcrap. But Meatwad dropped me this message, so you know what? Now I have to forevermore. Let's jump into it. What was going on when Antenna premiered? Sacrificing humans all the way to the top of the box office this week, we have Apocalypto bringing in $15 million. Mel Gibson did it again, right to the top. No surprise there. This is Mel Gibson's film after 2004's The Passion of the Christ, which we've talked about a bit on the podcast. Instead of focusing on Jesus some more and getting in trouble due to his anti-Semitic views, Mel Gibson, he flipped the script here. He's focusing on the Mayans now. Apocalypto with a 7.8 out of 10 on IMDb and a 65% on Rotten Tomatoes. This one is received pretty well, and actually, as of this episode coming out, you can watch it for free on Tubi. However, I don't know if you'd want to, because I hate to tell you, there are no shared cast or crew between this film and Aqua Teen Hunger Force. But then you have to remember, well, Apocalypto, they used mostly native actors for it. So I guess that kind of makes sense. Those native actors weren't really hanging around William Street at this period. Something interesting, though, is that the teaser trailer for the film has an almost entirely different cast than the one that ends up in the film. So that's kind of interesting the way that worked out. I liked this little factoid on IMDb. I'm just going to read it to you as it is. Because of heavy rains in Mexico, the release date moved from August 4th, 2006 to December 8th, 2006. And I understand what they're saying, right? You assume because of heavy rains, they had to delay filming, but they don't say that here. It's just like, because the rains were heavy, they had to release the film later. they don't really give you a lot of context there, but I assume that's the case. One more factoid for you here. The amount of digital footage shot equals approximately 2 million feet of conventional film. And that is the dumbest statistic I've ever seen in my life. I mean, who sat down and calculated that? Why? Who cares? It's digital. I mean, and you think that's a big deal? Did you know the amount of audio recorded for this podcast equals roughly 2 billion feet? Yeah, how about that, Mel Gibson? I fucking suck at talking and mess up every 7 seconds and have to edit the hell out of this thing. Maybe I forget the record button on when I get up to go to the bathroom, and boom, there's another 1 billion feet at least. It takes me a long time in there. Come at me, Apocalypto. That stat ain't shit. Whatever. Moving on here, I do have some television news for you. Bugs of the world, you can sleep easy tonight because Fear Factor is going off the air. Joe Rogan is done feeding bugs to television personality wannabes. It's all right. Centipedes, rest a little bit easier. You could rest those 10 million legs for another day. Joe Rogan, I wonder what ends up happening to him after Fear Factor. Anyways, moving on, let's give a little listen to our top album this week. Our top album this week is Jay-Z's Kingdom Come, moving over 680,000 units this week. And I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, Ronnie, hold on here. We talked about Jay-Z's The Black Album in a previous episode, and that was his retirement album. He was done with music, he was saying. Well, let me tell you, he wasn't. And I mean, I guess technically if you're alive in 2024, you know he wasn't done. And he, in fact, kept putting out albums, even though he was supposed to retire with 2003's The Black Album. So I guess the idea here was, for The Black Album, there was the music video for 99 Problems, right? And at the end of that video, Jay-Z, he goes down in a hail of gunfire. Well, later Jay-Z stated in interviews that that scene was supposed to represent the death of Jay-Z and the rebirth of Sean Carter. So with this album, he was initially going to release it as Sean Carter, not Jay-Z. But, you know, he looked at his bank account and he was like, well, shit, I'll make a lot more money as Jay-Z than Sean Carter, which is his real name, if you didn't know. Here you go. It's released now as Jay-Z, as is every other thing that he's basically done since then. Now, this is a bit of a comeback record here. I mean, only 3 years later after his previous album, but it was not really received that warmly by critics and fans alike. As you can tell, it sold well enough. But now, even Jay-Z himself rates this album as his worst, and a lot of people really don't like this record. I was listening through it. It's fine, like, it's not bad, but there's really nothing here that would make you want to listen to it over any other Jay-Z album. And Jay-Z, he's somebody that we've talked about a lot in this podcast. I mean, we talked about The Blueprint. I think we talked about The Blueprint 2. We talked about The Black Album. Now we're talking about Kingdom Come. Jay-Z, I think, deserves a spot in the Dancing is Forbidden Hall of Fame. And something tells me that we'll probably be talking about him in future episodes. So that's Jay-Z with his album Kingdom Come. Kind of a stinker, but hey, what are you going to do? It still sold over 500,000 units in 1 week alone, so who cares? Our top single this week, the same as it was during Bart Oates, it is I Wanna Love You by Akon featuring Snoop Dogg. I do want to shout out on December 5th, so just 5 days before Antenna comes out, actor and pop rock singer and musician Drake Bell releases his major record label debut, It's Only Time, under Universal Motown Records. So Drake from Drake and Josh, he's putting out a big boy major label record. I can't say I heard it, but like I definitely grew up hearing his music, particularly the Drake and Josh theme song, which was a very fun show. I think he did the iCarly theme song too, and that show, I don't even gotta tell you, it's amazing. And Drake Bell's music seems to be received pretty well. Like, he seems to have something of artistic integrity, but I haven't listened to a whole lot of it otherwise, so I don't really know. But there's some music news from this week. Moving on now to our video games, we have a few things coming out here. For example, Cartoon Network Racing comes out on the PlayStation 2 and Nintendo DS. But don't get too excited. No Adult Swim characters in Cartoon Network Racing. We have Kirby Squeak Squad coming to Nintendo DS this past week. Yakuza 2 comes to Japan on the PlayStation 2, but that won't come to the rest of the world until a little while later. But I know the Yakuza games have a pretty good rep. We have Castlevania Portrait of Ruin coming to the Nintendo DS. And then the game I want to talk a little bit about, we have Metal Gear Solid Portable Ops coming to the PSP. Now, I haven't played this Metal Gear Solid game. The only Metal Gear Solid game I've played was Metal Gear Solid 3 Snake Eater, the Nintendo 3DS port. So I played that, and I guess this game is set 6 years after the events of that game. So I know a little bit about like the characters involved here. Metal Gear Solid 3 Snake Eater, I liked it enough when I played it. I actually got to the very end, and there's like one last boss fight you have to do, and I couldn't get past the boss fight, so I technically haven't beaten the game, but I did play through basically all of it. And I tried it out because I'm a big fan of the Tom Clancy Splinter Cell series of games, and Metal Gear Solid is kind of compared to that a lot. But I found it to be very different. In fact, I wasn't that crazy about this game. I found there's like a lot of story. It's a Hideo Kojima game. So there's like a ton of story here, a lot of character stuff that I didn't care a whole lot about. I appreciated it for what it was, but like I don't really care about that when I'm playing these kinds of games. I found the actual gameplay just like a lesser version of Splinter Cell. The stealth mechanics weren't particularly engaging. In fact, they were kind of annoying. I could go on. So I wasn't like a huge fan. I haven't played any games since, but I was curious to see what was going on in regards to this game when Antenna came out on GameSpot.com back in 2006. GameSpot being a website I would have been looking at very rarely when I was trying to look games up at this time. I certainly did not have the money for video games, so that was very rarely. But I did go to the site once or twice, and GameSpot had this to say about Metal Gear Solid Portable Ops. Just what the PSP needed. This latest Metal Gear delivers on all fronts with an excellent story, a deep campaign, and a complete set of multiplayer features. So that was a little blurb on their website. It wouldn't let me look at the full article, but I feel like that's enough for this. This game got good reviews. A lot of people seem to like it. It is a bit of a return to the gameplay of the main series games, which is a good thing. Because a lot of times when developers make these portable versions of a game, like a console game, they always like dumb it down and change the gameplay, it seems, but that's not really the case here with this PSP version. It seems to be the full kit and caboodle, so pretty cool. So all right, it is December 10th, 2006, and you are just somebody who loves a good comeback. This week you're bouncing off the walls because Mel Gibson made a comeback with Apocalypto. Jay-Z, you know he's coming back with Kingdom Come. And Metal Gear Solid, Naked Snake, he's making a comeback on the PSP this week. Everything is just coming back. It's like a goddamn boomerang. You throw it, and it comes right back to you. And this Sunday on Adult Swim, it's the same thing, because every Sunday you're turning up, and Adult Swim, they're throwing right back at you some quality content and programming. Let's jump into it here. First up at 10 p.m., you got Futurama with the episode I Dated a Robot, this not being a new episode. After that, 10:30 p.m., we have this episode of Aqua Teen Antenna, a fantastic follow-up to some Futurama. After that, again, we get some Aqua Teen. You better believe it. The episode is Season 2, Episode 22's The.
Here's that candy cane I promised you.
No. Save it for Christmas. Shove it just right back up your ass. Allah see you never.
Wait, whoa. Wait a minute, Carl. I'll see you this weekend, right? I mean, it's a condo warming party. We're gonna get all crazy up in here.
What? You're gonna have girls here?
Do you know any?
Frylock taking charge of his life and moving out in that one. Although, of course, then we see Master Shake, Meatwad, and Carl. They all suffer greatly for it. Needless to say, we covered that one on the podcast feed already. And hey, speaking of Mr. J. Wade Edwards, he shows up in that episode as himself.
Hey, Jay, what's happening? You came. Did you bring your toga?
Am I late?
We were just talking about him in the news section there. How about that? After that, we have a string of brand spanking new episodes, so let's get into it here. 11 p.m., we have Family Guy with Chick Cancer. 11:30 p.m., Assy McGee with Game of Death. 11:45 p.m., we get Metalocalypse with Death Stars. And this episode, the band tries to make a film, but they suck at acting, and then accidentally, the film and everyone who saw it gets burned. So, I definitely saw that one, probably back in the like when it aired, so it's possible I saw Antenna that night as well. But I do remember that one. It's very funny. They're very bad at acting. And a possible reference to that is in the scene, like towards the end, when all these characters are dying who saw the film. As the character J.F. Amarath is dying, he screams, "You're tearing me apart." A possible reference to The Room, which is my favorite film, and that is a very iconic line from it.
"You are lying. I never hit you. You are tearing me apart, Lisa!"
So cool to see them possibly, I mean, they probably are referencing this cult classic bad movie in an episode about the band Metalocalypse making a bad movie of their very own. And worth mentioning, The Room goes on to be played on Adult Swim. So after that, continuing on with our new episodes, at midnight we get Squidbillies with Survival of the Dumbest. 12:15 a.m., Moral Oral with Offensiveness. 12:30 a.m. gives us Frisky Dingo with The Odd Couple. And I've said it before that I don't really know if I've seen a full episode of Frisky Dingo, but the episode synopsis on this one is pretty funny. Killface and billionaire tycoon Xander Cruz are now roommates and bestest buds. And Killface and Xander Cruz are like enemies in the show, so it's they're just taking the enemies, the protagonist and the antagonist, and they're making them be roommates in this episode. It sounds like a good time. After that, our last new episode of the night, 12:45 a.m. gives us 12-ounce mouse Farewell. After that, two not new episodes, 1 a.m. with the Venture Bros Showdown at Cremation Creek Part 1. This episode debuting back in October, so it's relatively new. And then 1:30 a.m. is definitely not new. We have The Oblongs with Misfit Love, which is the pilot episode of The Oblongs. And, you know, seeing The Oblongs pop back up here makes this lineup kind of striking to me because The Oblongs got picked up by Adult Swim in 2002. I covered the show over on the Patreon, so I'm not going to get into it here. But it aired every year after that, including earlier in 2006. But now we have it airing again while Aqua Teen is putting out new episodes, which we saw in the third season of the show, the fourth season of the show. That's not really new. But like this brings me back to a more classic Adult Swim lineup, closer to the one that we started with when we started doing this podcast. And yeah, it's just striking to me because obviously the surrounding shows mostly are not old, at least when it comes to original programming. Assy McGee, Metalocalypse, Squidbillies, Frisky Dingo, Mora Oral, 12-Ounce Mouse, that's all newer stuff. So to have The Oblongs kind of ending the night here while also seeing Aqua Teen on this lineup, I don't know, it just brings me back to those earlier days of Adult Swim and reminds you of how much of a triumph that Aqua Teen is, because the Brack Show is done, C-Lab is done, Space Ghost is done, and Harvey Birdman we actually had at the beginning of our lineup this season in the 2006 episodes, and they have a couple more episodes coming out in 2007, but for the most part, Harvey Birdman's about to be done too. So it's just Aqua Teen kind of left standing from this original lineup, which I think is very, very cool, and I don't know, just seeing the Oblongs reminded me of that, because in my mind, The Oblongs is very much like, you know, an early 2000s show, and here we are in mid to almost mid-late 2000s. It's almost 2007 here. So, I don't know, just made me think of that, wanted to mention it here. That's our lineup this week. It's a good old lineup. You can't complain about it, but what do you say we jump in and talk about the episode that we are gathered here today to discuss, Antenna? Let's go talk about it. Dancing is Forbidden is made possible by the Moonmasters over at patreon.com/dancingisforbidden, who give every single month their hard-earned Yorlocks to allow this show to continue. I couldn't do it without them, but I could not do it without them. Of course, thank you to everybody over there who signed up, who just, again, allows this show to continue. Outside of my thanks, they're also getting exclusive episodes over there and more stuff to come in the future. If you're wondering if I will cover Space Cadets or Baffler Meal or Colon Movie Film for Theaters, well, goddammit, I already did do that over at patreon.com/dancingisforbidden. And signing up back in the fall of 2023, we have Facky signing I never even said that out loud or thought about that. Yeah, we got Facky, their profile picture here. It's fucking early from the Squidbillies, so, you know, Facky knows what's up. Early wearing a hat that says, I love cock, very big, but then underneath, very small, it says fighting. So, Facky loves Squidbillies, also loves Aqua Teen. You know what? I love Facky and also that name that makes me laugh. Also signing up back in the fall of 2023, we have Joshua, who writes music I'm seeing as Touring Amos, which you may think sounds like Tori Amos, and yeah, that, you know, to quote Tommy Wiseau from The Room, that's the idea. I went and checked out Joshua's music. It was great. It sounded exactly like something you would expect to hear on Adult Swim. So I'll put a link to that in the description. Joshua doesn't know I'm telling you about this. I did some sleuthing. That's why I do this podcast. I like Googling stuff. I like looking around on the net, see what I can get up to. And I got up to some good music over there on Joshua's Bandcamp. Joshua, Facky, thank you both for signing up at the $5 tier. If my math is correct, both of your $5 together is $25 a month between the two of them. That's a lot of money. Thanks, fellas. Oh, wait, no, I did the plus sign on the side, not the normal plus sign. God damn it.
Coming up next, Aqua Teen Hunger Force.
Antenna making its Adult Swim debut on December 10th, 2006, this episode airing with a TVMA rating, I assume due to the heavy use of blood towards the end of the episode. That's my guess. Our cast on this one, we have the usual suspects: Dave Willis as Carl and Meatwad, Dana Snyder as Master Shake, and Carrie Means as Frylock. And as I mentioned up top, we have a very exciting group of guest stars here. Mike Judge as an alien we will see in the episode, Will Forte playing the other alien we will see, and George Lowe playing himself. As usual, we will talk about these guys as we meet them in the episode here. Editing on this one, it's just Mr. Ned Hastings on the edit here. No assistant editor, no second editor, it's just Ned holding it down. So what do we open into on Antenna? I'll tell you what we open in on. We have Master Shake. He's up on a stage speaking into a microphone, and visually this is the exact same setup as in Season 3, Episode 12's Hypnogerm. So it's that exact background. He's up on a stage here with that exact microphone, and he's talking to an audience. We don't see the audience here. We never get an audience shot, but Shake will be doing a routine, and then we'll hear him come in with a voiceover.
So the bum said, I ate it off the sidewalk with my balls. I kid you, I love all people. Hey, you know what a walrus and Tupperware have in common? They're both looking for a tight seal. No takers over at that table, right, ladies? But seriously, I'd like to bring it down a notch. I see your face, your rosy, rosette cheeks. And I mean your buns. Those squishy, mushy buns.
I wasn't always a superstar. I used to be a boring old cop.
Why would anyone make a show about something you'd throw away? But things change, my friend.
Money rolls in like waves lapping on the shore.
And if you've got talent, well, they'll find you.
All right, so this has to be referencing some other film or something. I can't imagine that it's not, but it's fun to hear Shake like, why would somebody make a show about something you just throw away? This potentially being Matt and Dave poking fun at themselves for their food product show here. But really quickly, I want to mention that microphone again. I believe the first time we saw that microphone pop up, it wasn't actually in Hypnogerm. It dates back to at least Season 3, Episode 4's G-Wiz, when, coincidentally, relating to this episode, George Lowe in that episode, he is giving like a public service announcement about censorship or whatever. And this is the exact same microphone George uses in that scene. And then again in Hypnogerm, Shake uses it. And we're seeing that mic again here. So this behavior for Shake, though, is not new. We've seen this show-busy side of Master Shake in previous episodes, including Hypnogerm, right? Like, he has this whole sequence where he is doing a show just like this one. And that personality of Shake really comes from Dana Snyder. Matt and Dave did not envision Shake as this old-timey showbiz wannabe. That really comes from Dana Snyder. I wouldn't be surprised if he was pitching in lines here for what Shake is saying. He's doing these hacky kind of jokes. For example, he's kind of bad-mouthing a homeless man at the beginning of the episode here, but then he's like, no, I love all people. Like, he's just, like, walking it back. I don't know, it's just Dana's really pulling it off here of this kind of performer. This clip, though, it's basically setting up the episode, and that this clip will make a lot more sense once you've seen the entire episode, but right now it's kind of nonsensical because moving into our next clip now, like continuing with the episode, we pull back from Shake doing that performance and we see it's their TV and it's all static on the TV. There's no cable signal, which is something we've dealt with on Aqua Teen before, notably in Season 2, Episode 11's Universal Remonster. It's always a good time when the Aqua Teen's TV isn't working, and now is one of those times because we're going to see Shake. He's pissed off. The TV's not working. Meatwad's in the room, too. They're trying to figure this problem out.
Listen, let me speak to a supervisor. Because you were very rude to me. I will fly directly to India tonight, and I will see your face in my face.
The TV ain't working.
What?
Hey.
What's your name?
Hey.
What is your name? Give me a name.
Hey.
Who are you talking to?
I am about to find out. Yes, hung up! Let's see if he fixed it.
Do you fix the TV?
You tell me.
Really? Yeah.
Let me tell you about these people. And they grow these shows in India, and they're my favorite shows, and they know that. And since I produce them, they won't give them to me for free.
Hey, let's watch the TV, see if you star in none of them movies.
I swear to God, a whole night of TV has been ruined. Thank you, India.
That's Shake throwing down the remote control. It goes up in an explosion, as you would expect and hope. I like Shake. He starts flipping through the channels. He flips from 6 to 7 to 8, and it's all just static. This is some classic Aqua Teen stuff, particularly with Meatwad asking if the TV is fixed. Shake says, well, what do you think? And then they sit there for literally 4 seconds looking at it, and then, of course, Meatwad goes, yeah. I also love Meatwad playing into Shake being in these movies, which is something that Meatwad has also done from time to time on Aqua Teen. There's been a few references from Shake to Mexicans this season, so it's interesting to see now he's set his sights on Indians who are giving him, in his mind, poor support over the phone, and also they're withholding his favorite shows that are grown directly in India. I think Shake needs to get off the internet where he's reading some of this stuff. So let's jump back into the scene here. We have the guys just sitting in the living room talking about this. And then Meatwad will make an allusion to something outside. And then we get a cut to outside where we see this giant tower built over Carl's house. And they'll briefly discuss it.
Hey, you remember that one show? Roared away, apply directly to the roared. Roared away, apply directly to the roared.
Apply directly to the roared.
That's a good show.
Yeah, that was good.
Well, you don't think it got nothing to do with that thing out there, do you?
Well, no. It's the Indians and their barbaric ways. Yogurt running down their faces and boobs flapping around. Hey, you ever hear of a bra? I've seen one.
Okay, so I think that Shake has, like, indigenous tribes in Africa confused with Indians. But regardless, I want to jump to the beginning of that clip to what Meatwad was saying regarding Roid Away.
Roid Away, apply directly to the roid. Roid Away, apply directly to the roid.
This isn't just randomness or silliness. This is actually referencing a contemporary commercial at the time for Head On.
Head On, apply directly to the forehead. Head On, apply directly to the forehead. Head On, apply directly to the forehead. Head On, available at Walgreens.
Head On was an over-the-counter medication that basically was like a glue stick that you rubbed on your forehead. And the idea here is it was headache relief. However, it was never proven to actually cure any sort of headache issues. It was never approved by the FDA. So basically, it was like snake oil, right? It didn't really do anything. But here's the thing, okay? That commercial went viral this year in 2006 when this episode of Aqua Teen came out. And visually, all you have is a lady basically putting the glue stick thing on her head, and that's kind of it. Then they show you the packaging, and it's very strange because it just repeats 3 times, head on, apply directly to the forehead. You'll notice it doesn't actually tell you what it does. And in fact, the packaging doesn't either that you see on the screen. That is because in a previous commercial, they stated that it was headache relief. However, because these claims were completely unfounded, they had to pull those commercials due to objections by the Better Business Bureau because it was essentially lying. And that's why in this commercial that I just played for you, they had to insinuate what it did. They couldn't say anything about curing headaches or anything like that, just apply it directly to your head, basically hoping that the viewer would get the idea of what this dog shit product actually did. So yeah, the commercial went viral because it was just so strange, and that's what they are referencing here, except they're making it about hemorrhoids. Roid Away, applied directly to the roid. I love Matt and Dave's dig at this, and from what I could tell, Head On, you can't buy it anymore. It's not a thing. Surprise, surprise, as far as I could tell, it didn't really do anything. But it did give us a viral commercial in 2006, and it gave us a good joke in this Aqua Teen episode. So thanks, Head On. I do like, though, that Meatwad calls that commercial that he saw a show, and he's like, that's a good show, which I swear is not the first time Meatwad has said that on Aqua Teen before. So visually, what we got when we saw outside, we had like this pulled back exterior shot of the Aqua Teen's house and Carl's house, and built over Carl's house is this giant like antenna tower structure. It's just massive. It's gargantuan. We absolutely do not see anywhere near the top of it. We just see the structure built over Carl's house, and unsurprisingly, it's casting a huge shadow on the Aqua Teen's house, on Carl's house. It's just very unsightly. Actually, Aqua Teen's art director, Bob Pettit, told me that this image that he made for the tower, which we will be exploring throughout the episode here, it was about 30 inches. Like, if you were to print it out, it would be 30 inches long is how much he designed of this tower. So, again, we'll be looking at this tower a bit more throughout the episode, but we get a glimpse of it here. Immediately, Shake's like, nah, that's not what's causing the problems with the cable. Which, I mean, if it were cable, it shouldn't be causing problems, right? It's a cable line. Why would that affect it? But regardless, in this episode, that is what is affecting the cable here. Meatwad and Shake, they are absolutely not getting anywhere near to the bottom of this. But in our next clip now, Frylock, he will be. He's going to head over to Carl's house and see what the hell this antenna is.
Hey, man, what the hell is this tower doing here?
Oh, that? It's pretty sweet, huh? This dude gives me $40 a month to put it here, and I ain't got to do jack. Except rake into jack. You know what I mean?
Yeah, Carl.
40 lots.
What's it do?
Well, it'll mess with your telephone and your television, too.
Yeah, it definitely does that.
But mine comes in gray. I mean, you got to check this out, dude. I got great picture here.
Okay, so immediately we can see that something is up with Carl because his eyes look a little different, and also there's blood on his shirt, which is not explained at all in that clip, but we saw it. Some strange stuff going on with this antenna, but I do want to point out here a huge animation error, and that is Carl's walk cycle. Basically, he answers the door for Frylock, and then at the end of that clip, he goes inside his house, and he invites Frylock to follow him, and Carl, when he walks away, you really see that there's no walk cycle here. They literally just slide his character across the screen. And that is something that we saw earlier in the show's run and in other Adult Swim shows at that time, like Brack Show. And that's not surprising. They still do that from time to time on Aqua Teen, which is fine. But they're a bit more masterful at covering up that fact that Carl is not walking. He's really just bobbing up and down. But the thing is, we're so pulled back in this shot, you absolutely see that his legs are not moving whatsoever. It's a pretty pulled back shot when he just slides away. So pretty funny, and to me, somewhat of a nod to the earlier days of Aqua Teen. To the story, though, we learn that Carl's getting $40 a month to keep this antenna over his house here in his yard. I don't think it's worth it, but Carl's pretty excited about it. As you will hear in this next clip, Frylock goes inside Carl's house, and on Carl's TV, he's watching a very peculiar show. It's these two aliens. They kind of look like hammerhead sharks, maybe, like in their faces. And then they have these little arms, and then they have a bunch of legs at the bottom. They're just like these white blobby kind of things. And the show basically consists of these characters passing a box kind of back and forth. They're stacking the same set of boxes. Very boring, but Carl, for whatever reason, can't stop watching it. And then you'll hear these aliens. It's a bit of an interactive show. There's interactive elements because the aliens will chime in to what is happening to Frylock and Carl.
You ever seen a show?
No, I don't think so.
It's insane. Nothing happens. But I'm addicted to it.
Is this a show?
Yeah, no one gets it but me, you know.
It's exclusive to Carl!
Huh. Okay, so what's it about?
Well, you know, it's pretty boring, really. Because whenever I look up, they start pretending to stack stuff. But hey, I got all day to do this. Now that I got an outside source of income. 40 biggins!
Damn, man, do your eyes hurt?
Past couple days, they have bothered me. They feel like they're growing or something. But, hey, you'll pop some aspirin. I'm good to go.
Oh, gross.
Nah, don't worry about that. You know, just tilt your head back.
Just tilt your head back!
That's right.
Oh.
That's what those guys told me to do. And it works.
I like how Carl isn't questioning that he can, like, talk to these people on the TV. He's just like, yeah, that's what they told me to do. So I didn't tell you what happened there, but Frylock's nose started to bleed, which kind of explains Carl's shirt that has blood on the front of it, that he also had nosebleeds at some point. One of those aliens is Mr. Will Forte.
Tilt your head back!
Will Forte now is known for his show The Last Man on Earth, MacGruber. He was in, like, a lot of animated stuff now, like Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs, the Lego movie. He was in some new Netflix movie, Teenage Kraken, something like that. But back in 2006 here, Will Forte, he did have accomplishments, but he wasn't as well known as he is today. So this is actually Will's Adult Swim debut, and he'll go on to do some other Adult Swim shows, like he'll do Squidbillies in 2010. He does a lot of stuff with Tim and Eric on Awesome Show Great Job, their 2012 film. I absolutely love him in Tim and Eric stuff. He's great on there. But at this point, again, this is his Adult Swim debut, but he was a cast member on Saturday Night Live for a period before this, as well as doing the voice of Lincoln in Clone High. So he did have some accomplishments under his belt. He also was a writer on Third Rock from the Sun, and even That 70s Show, which I had no idea. He was a producer on That 70s Show as well. So he was accomplished, but he was not nearly as known as he is today. But I absolutely love Will Forte. He's always popping up and stuff, and his voice is pretty recognizable, so it's always a treat when he does. But again, his stuff in Tim and Eric is so great, especially the $1 billion movie. We'll talk about Mike Judge a little bit later. Let's jump over to our next clip now. So Frylock and Carl, they're at Carl's house. We're going to go outside now where we have Meatwad and Shake. They're trying to fix the cable themselves, take matters into their own hands here. Meatwad is outside. He's on the sidewalk outside the Aqua Teen's house, and he's holding a cable line, but then he's holding up like some sort of antenna, but he's wearing an aluminum foil hat. There's also some aluminum foil hanging off of the antenna that he's holding. I'll explain that after the clip. And he's also holding the walkie-talkie system that we saw, for example, in Season 4, Episode 6's Party All the Time. So Meatwad, he's got like the hand walkie-talkie part, and then Shake has the over-the-ear one, which you think would be reversed, because Shake is just sitting inside on the chair, so why does he need the hands-free one? Shouldn't Meatwad have that, who's carrying like two separate things? But regardless, that's what's going on here. They're communicating with each other, and the clip will end with Meatwad. He's on the sidewalk, but he's going to get ran over by a semi-truck.
How's it look?
Keep going.
Further!
It's getting clearer.
A little more.
Okay.
Clear. It's getting clearer now.
Getting better.
Roger. Keep going. Further.
Getting clearer. Perfect. Okay, stay right where
you are. Do not move.
Whoa. Shoot.
Wait. Now it's snowy again.
So, Meatwad, he's in the street, but he jumps out of the way of a semi-truck, but then he jumps onto the sidewalk, and the semi-truck backs up and runs him over, so a great joke there. Reminds me of Season 2, Episode 9's Meat Zone, when Shake gets ran over when he's on the sidewalk as well. And the truck that runs Meatwad over, I know we saw back as early as Season 1, Episode 7's Old Drippy. That's the truck that runs over Old Drippy, or hits him at least, and it's the same asset here. But to the scene, they're trying to get the cable to work, and I love it because this wouldn't work, because Meatwad doesn't have this cable plugged into the antenna that he's holding. But regardless, like I said, he's covered in aluminum foil as well as the antenna. The idea is, back in the days of the rabbit ears antennas on your TV set, people would add aluminum foil to that, the idea being like, oh, I'm making it bigger, it's going to catch more of a signal this way. In reality, that could accidentally help, but really it didn't do a whole lot of anything. But I assume that's the thinking here with Meatwad and Shake, is like, look, just put an aluminum foil on, you're more likely to catch a signal that way. I asked Bob Pettit how he went about doing this aluminum foil, and Bob says, there was a cool aftermarket app for Photoshop that did a wrinkled paper effect. So I painted a silvery textured shape of a dunce cap, then ran it through some high contrast passes in the app. That did most of the creases and lighting effect. It also had a fur effect that I used in part for Meatwad's blonde wig in the Chicken and Beans episode. So a bonus little factoid there from Bob. I just found it so convincing. I wouldn't be surprised if he just took a photograph of aluminum foil here, but that was not the case. It was done in Photoshop. Great joke in that clip, though, where the whole point is Meatwad's trying to catch a signal and Shake is going to tell him, like, okay, it's good, you can come back inside. But we see visually it's never changing, and even when Shake is like, oh yeah, perfect, and Meatwad stops, I mean, you can hear in the clip, there's still static. It's not actually making a difference. So very, very silly. And you have to wonder, like, is Shake messing with Meatwad, or does he genuinely think the image got better? Like, you really can't tell with how crazy these guys are, but regardless, it's a lot of fun to watch. Like I said, Meatwad, he got ran over by a truck, so Frylock is going to come inside with Meatwad, who's just a big mess. He's a mush of Meatwad here, but don't worry, Frylock will drop him and he'll kind of come back together into his normal shape. Frylock's going to scold Master Shake about this. Master Shake is going to whip out the chainsaw. They got to get to the bottom of this antenna problem.
Ugh, what's wrong with him?
You need to watch what you're doing to him.
Frylock, you know me. My love for him is beyond any rivers.
Look, we got to do something about that tower.
I'll show you what a man does with it.
Shake, no. Okay, look, just let me climb it and see what the deal is. Just do me one favor and don't destroy it until I get down, okay?
Okay.
So for the record, Frylock here politely asking Shake, don't destroy the tower. Let me just go up there and see what's happening. It's nice of Frylock to offer up to do this. But speaking of Frylock, I can't help but notice that Carrie Means is maybe sick or something while they're doing this episode.
You need to watch what you're doing to him.
I feel like Frylock isn't as angry in certain situations as he normally is, so not sure what the story there is, but just a little observation. This isn't a criticism of Carrie. If I got sick, I would refuse to even look at a microphone, okay? So let's keep that in mind. I like the way that Shake says, you know me, my love for him is beyond any rivers. We have Shake here expressing a rare moment of love for Meatwad. I don't think it's entirely authentic, but it is a rare occurrence in Aqua Teen. So before Frylock can climb that tower and see what's going on, we're going to cut over to Carl's house, where he is continuing to have adverse effects to watching this TV show. There's blood coming out of his nose, and his head is starting to swell up with blood because he's tilting his head back to stop the nosebleed. That blood's got to go somewhere.
Oh, my friggin' head.
You need to tilt your head back, Carl!
You must keep your blood.
Oh.
Further! Further!
It's really hurting.
Further! Further!
Yeah, see, if I do it anymore...
Tilt your head back further!
I think the blood's coming out of my eyes.
Put spoons over them, Carl!
What?
Someone climbs the tower. You know what you must do, beast man.
Yes, master.
Normally, Carl getting abused is something to laugh at, and I guess it still kind of is here, but I do feel bad for him. Like, everything he's going through, they're doing a great job here with the animation of conveying just how uncomfortable he is and how much he's going through. I mean, we literally see from one shot to the next of Carl that his head grows exponentially larger as it fills with blood. A funny way of portraying that. Obviously, they're not going to show that in real time happening on the show. They just cut to him a little bit later with a way bigger head, but the blood's squirting out of his eyes now. It's just very horrible. But they know that Frylock is climbing the antenna. He's climbing the tower. But before we get to that, I want to talk about one of the other voices here, Mr. Mike Judge.
Carl!
What?
Someone climbs the tower.
Mike Judge is absolutely just one of my favorites. I love his voice work, I love the TV shows he makes, and I love the movies that he makes. So you may know Mike Judge from such shows as Beavis and Butthead, King of the Hill, and Silicon Valley, as well as his films like Office Space, Idiocracy, and Extract. There's a bunch more, but Mike Judge, at this point in 2006, he's doing fine. He's already had Beavis and Butthead and King of the Hill come out. And in my interview with Dave Willis in 2022, I asked him exactly, how did they get Mike Judge? Like, how did that come about? And Dave explained it to me.
Mike Judge, I initially met interviewing him for Space Ghost. And he did a very crazy, I think one of the questions I asked is, do you do any other voices? And he's like, not really. You know, I said, because at the time King of the Hill was coming out, I said, it's interesting that Hank Hill Sounds an awful lot like that neighbor, Beavis and Butthead.
Tom Anderson, yeah.
And he did a funny bit with that. But then he also said, yeah, I have this one other voice. It's sort of this Hanna-Barbera villain. And I'm trying to remember what he said. It's like, lay down your weapons, beast man. And it was like, so years later, I reached out and was like, hey, would you do that guy for us? And I think he just does it for the love of the game. I don't know, yeah. You know.
He doesn't have to do it.
He certainly doesn't need the money, I'm sure. And he's just like, I think he just enjoyed doing it. So whenever I'd reach out, you know, he did it. It was like super cool, you know. And at the time, I think Will Forte played the other alien.
You need to tilt your head back, Carl. You must keep your blood further.
At a time before everyone realized how much of a genius that dude is. Mm-hmm. And it was like, oh my God, I can't believe we got both of these guys in this thing. So
that's Dave talking a little bit about this episode, Antenna, but he describes how they got Mike Judge, because Mike Judge was in a 1997 episode of Space Ghost Coast to Coast called Sphinx. And I would suggest you check that episode out. I'll put a link in the description. It's absolutely free to watch on Adult Swim's website. I think all Space Ghost Coast to Coast is right now as of this recording. But Dave was right with what Mike Judge said in that episode. I'm going to play the clip. There's a lot going on here, but you'll hear Mike Judge say something here that he later says in Antenna years later.
Guys, come on.
The power sucker is mine now, beast man.
That's my tail.
You betcha.
Give me back my tail.
So Mike Judge says beast man there, just like he says in Antenna.
You know what you must do, beast man.
Guys,
the power sucker is mine now, beast man.
So just a cool connection there. Again, go check out that Space Ghost Coast to Coast episode. It's very funny. Mike Judge is amazing. And he started his career in animation at the age of 30. Initially, he went to school for physics. And he graduated, worked in the field for a little bit, particularly working with graphics cards, like in the late 80s or early 90s or something like that. But he really didn't like it. He did not enjoy that lifestyle. So he became a bass player in a traveling blues band for a bit. But he was always fascinated with animation. And then around the age of 30, he started to teach himself how to animate by getting books from the library on it. And he came up with a few cartoons, one of which was the Beavis and Butthead characters. So Mike Judge not only is a director, a writer, a voice actor, but he also is a cartoonist. He animated a lot of those early ones by himself. But of course, as it got picked up by MTV, then they brought on a whole crew of people. But not only is Mike Judge a cartoonist, but like I said, a voice actor. He does both of Beavis and Butthead on the show. And he does a lot of characters on King of the Hill, such as Hank Hill, Boomhauer, Dooley, Ted Wasanasong, like the list just goes on. He voices so many characters in that show, and he does so many different voices too. It's great. And then of course goes on to make great films like Office Space, which is a classic, Idiocracy, which I know a lot of people don't like, but I really enjoy. Just all sorts of stuff. As you could tell, I love Mike Judge. Really excited to cover a King of the Hill over on the Patreon at some point, because that show does come to Adult Swim. Let's jump back into our scene now, because Frylock, he's starting to climb the tower, and the aliens informed Carl he has to stop them. So Carl, he's going to go out there and tell Frylock to get off that tower. I wonder what Frylock's going to say.
Hey! Get out from the tower!
No! He won't come down.
Then we shall tell him in our own little way. Send voiceover artist George Lowe.
Yes! George Lowe will force him from the tower.
We're getting some fun cuts back and forth between like the tower and then inside Carl's house and stuff. I love the comedic timing of Carl goes out there. He's like, hey, get off the tower. Frylock just says, no. And then it cuts instantly to Carl back inside telling the aliens, like, he said no. What am I supposed to do about it? But as the aliens describe, they have their own little way of dealing with this. They are sending in voice actor George Lowe, who is no stranger to us. In fact, we just heard him in that clip with Mike Judge on Space Ghost, because George Lowe, he did play Space Ghost in Space Ghost Coast to Coast. So we've talked about him a lot on this podcast. He's been in Aqua Teen a few times. We're going to see him here just as himself, which is typically how we see him. But I do want to mention to the drawing of George Lowe, it appears like every time they show him in the show, he looks a little bit different. It's like a new drawing, at least these first three times. So we first saw him in season one, episode 17's Mail Order Bride, where he was a wedding DJ. We saw him there. Then we saw him again in season three, episode 4's Gee Whiz, as the person talking in that censorship video. And now we're seeing him here in season four. And every time the drawing is a little bit different. But George is here. We have a long clip. There's really no way to cut this up, but just enjoy the ride.
What's up, Frime Lom?
Who are you?
Captain Beefy. Jorm Lom. Hail Jibanla forever.
So what do you mean?
God bless you and all you do for television, Frylock. You know, our children are learning from you.
So you...
You look tasty and heavily salted.
Okay.
My ex-girlfriend was salty. Man,
look, can I stop you for a second, okay?
Another joke for another time.
So why are you here?
The home office in Grand Rapids sent me down to get you off the tower. It's affecting the morning show. You being here, the morning guys can't do their thing. The Nutty Bunch, Larry and Eric.
So, wait a minute.
Can you get me a regular gig?
What?
It's a joke, for God's sake.
Okay, let's start this again, okay? Who are you?
George Lowe. I've been hired by aliens to tell you to get off the tower. I am the voice master.
George, I'm not getting off the tower.
That's fine, Aunt Krabby. I still get paid. You just stay right where you are. Seriously, I got 40 large to do this pig.
Wow, $40, huh?
It's all in their currency, but they say the Yorlock is very strong in the States right now, and Mom agreed, so here we all are. She's like, you're getting how many Yorlocks for this? I said, oh, don't you worry, baby. Enough to crank the generator back up another week or two.
George.
The Yorlock. Isn't that new bag that seals in freshness, the Yorlock?
George, please.
Hold on a second. I'm going to try and give you some Mason Adams here. Yorlock.
George.
It keeps your food fresher longer.
Earth to George.
A product of Ching Dowdy Dodo Industries.
George! Why you?
I was available. They... couldn't afford LaFontaine. Yeah, Mr. $30,000 a minute.
Oh, wait.
Mr. Big Shot, in a world where towers rule the universe.
Is that smoke?
You're telling me that ain't the same?
Seriously.
That's the same.
George, I smell some folk art burning.
Folk art? Where? Hey, wait a minute. Take my demo on cassette. Oh, hey, better. Yeah, go to the website. New York Demos, voice talent under radio imaging. It's in the New York site, though, not the Beverly Hills one.
A lot of stuff going on here. Obviously, we can't break down every single thing because George Lowe is just going off the walls, switching from thing to thing every few seconds here. And that's really the magic that George brought to Space Ghost Coast to Coast, because what they would do is, you know, they'd have a few pages for his script, but he would go on forever just talking about whatever was bothering him that day or just what he thought about the script or anything. And they would just keep rolling and repurpose that in the Space Ghost episode. And I feel like that's a lot of what's going on here, is that George is just airing out lots of grievances with other voiceover artists. For example, he mentions Mason Adams, who was the longtime voice of Smuckers. He also mentions Don LaFontaine, who was the famous promo voice actor who always said, in a world, in that super deep voice. George is just, he's just taken all of them out. George also mentions a local Atlanta group of broadcasters, Larry and Eric, with the Nutty Bunch. So, in my email with Bob Pettit, because Bob is an Atlanta guy, Bob explains this a bit further. Bob says, George mentions Larry and Eric's radio show, The Nutty Bunch. This referred to a real shock jock morning Atlanta radio show Dave appeared on several times, me once, called The Regular Guys. Eric Von Hessler now has a successful afternoon AM radio show, The Von Hessler Doctrine. His sidekick, as he was on The Regular Guys, is Tim Andrews, the man of a thousand voices. So this is Ronnie cutting in, because I had no idea of this connection, because Tim Andrews is a friend of the podcast. He's a friend of Dancing is Forbidden. I've talked about him and his podcast, the Radio Labyrinth podcast, as well as the Popcast, several times on this podcast here, because Tim interviews Dave a lot, especially, but also he interviewed Matt pretty recently, and I always shout those out here on the podcast because Tim is always asking them great questions that I don't hear asked elsewhere. Tim is a huge Aqua Teen fan. In fact, he got to do a voice in the newest season of the show. He voiced on season 12, episode 3's script title, The Tees Are Twos. So I was aware that Tim was doing a radio show called The Von Hessler Doctrine, but I didn't know a whole lot about what it was. But Eric Von Hessler of that show that Tim does is the Eric that George Lowe is commenting on here. So a very specific deep dive here into Atlanta radio. But thank you so much to Bob Pettit for that clarification, because I had no clue, again, not living in Atlanta. But Bob does go on in his email to say, the other regular guy's host, Larry, is now in the mortgage banking business. Eric still on occasion refers to the old show on air, calling it the Funky Bunch in mock tribute to this scene. So again, thank you, Bob, for this clarification. It's so cool to see. To our scene, George Lowe, he does some very George Lowe things. Frylock pushes George Lowe off of the tower, and you hear him plop after a certain amount of time. But Frylock says, look, there's some burning folk art, to try and get George's, like, attention away from whatever he's talking about. And that's because George Lowe is a huge fan of folk art. He's a huge collector. In fact, I found two separate Fox News pieces on George being a huge folk art fan, like a huge collector of it. One of these pieces is from 2006, 2007, so around the time this episode came out. Another one is from 2021, so both of those links will be in the description. They're both worth checking out, because George has this fantastic collection of folk art. So that's why Frylock references it here, saying, look, burning folk art. He's trying to get George's attention, unsuccessfully so. I do want to say, as George is falling off of the tower, he does mention finding his demo online. I did go to what he was saying, like I Googled that in, but I was not able to find anything, so I'm not sure if that was a real website at any point, or if he was just saying it or what. And I also have to wonder how much of this was scripted versus George Lowe just being himself. But the way it all flows, I could really just see this being George Lowe running with whatever script he was given. So always a pleasure to see him. And luckily, this isn't the last we will see of him this episode, but he is off the tower. Frylock is still climbing up that bad boy. And I do want to say, it's funny seeing Frylock climb up the ladder of this tower. Like, we don't actually see him animated in any sort of climbing way, but he flies, right? He floats, so he's just kind of floating up the ladder there. So, George Lowe fell off the tower. We're going to cut back into Carl's house, and the aliens, they knew that their own little way of dealing with this with Mr. George Lowe, it did not work.
It didn't work! You need to tilt your head back, Carl!
I can't tilt it back any further, dude.
The waves are very dangerous.
But we pay you handsomely.
I know, and I appreciate that, but, I mean, look at the blood in here, man. I gotta run a wet vac through here or something.
No, you will stay, and you will watch us stack!
Okay. What about the tower, though?
Oh, let him come, and we will crush him with our mighty fists of rage.
So we see Carl. He is looking horrible. His head is just so disgustingly gigantic. There's a pool of blood all in his house at this point. So that's the second time this season that we've had Carl's house flooded with something, the previous time being the Global Grilling episode. Luckily this time, though, he doesn't have to save the porno tapes, so don't worry about those money shots, they're alright. But the aliens reveal, really what's affecting him here is the radio waves, it sounds like, from the antenna, more so than the actual television show itself. Of course, in Aqua Teen, sometimes it can be hard to follow the logic or lack thereof throughout the episode, but they did see that there. My impression was that it was the TV show of them stacking boxes that was doing this to Carl, because it has not happened to Shake and Meatwad yet. But regardless to our scene, we have the aliens there laughing. They're all cocky and confident, like, oh, let him come. We'll deal with him with our fists of rage. Well, in classic Aqua Teen timing, Frylock shows up basically right as they say that. He'll bash their heads together, knocking them out instantly. Like, he deals with them like they're nothing at all. And then he's going to address Carl.
What are you two doing?
Don't touch us!
Leave us alone!
Carl, wake up!
No, I'm awake. I'm up. What?
This isn't a cell tower at all. This tower goes all the way up to their planet. They were going to climb down it and attack us. Whoa! What the hell was that?
So we saw visually that Frylock is there, like he's addressing Carl, but then like the platform or like whatever he's on moves. We'll get to that. But we learn that this isn't actually a cell tower. It's more or less just a ladder to their home planet. Like, this makes absolutely no sense. It's so nonsensical, but it's so funny. They could have just dropped a ladder and climbed down. Like, why do they need this tower here? Why aren't they attacking already? Because Frylock just climbed up, no problem. And he didn't see anybody on the way, presumably. So, no clue what's what these aliens think is going to happen. But as we could see, they are kind of dumb by how easily Frylock gets past their defenses. And this is kind of like a classic Aqua Teen-styled episode where we have Frylock actually solving some sort of problem here. We have these incompetent villains who can kind of do stuff, but they're still dumb, and like the way that they go about enacting their plan is stupid. This is just, it kind of surprises me this season because we don't really get episodes like this anymore. And naturally, Frylock being the one to solve these issues, he's kind of the only one competent enough to do so. But we are going to be seeing Master Shake and Meatwad now, because in that last clip, Frylock, there was some sort of disturbance atop the tower. We're going to see that was Master Shake, because remember when he had that chainsaw, he was ready to chainsaw down that tower? Well, he's tired of waiting. Shake's chainsawing. We're also going to see Meatwad having a conversation here with George Lowe, and then Frylock is going to call Master Shake on the phone to say, "Dude, I asked you not to cut the tower down."
For an autograph? You're out of your mind.
Daddy gets 25 for a sketch.
From who? See, boy. That much out come with a hand job or something.
Oh, it does.
Would you please keep it down while I'm trying to saw?
Hello?
Shake, don't
cut down that antenna.
Give me one good reason. Besides the fact that you asked me nicely before you went up there.
You know, Shake, they get every TV show up here. I mean, even pay-per-view.
Stay there. I'm coming up.
That is Shake throwing his phone down. It explodes. Master Shake and Frylock actually using the exact same flip phone here. Usually this is Frylock's phone, but for this scene, Shake had the same one. I'm surprised they didn't have him with the normal house phone that they have. And if we want to get into past episodes, you got to really be like, "Wow, man, you're not using your e-helmet to take this call." So Shake's climbing up the tower, but I love this little conversation between Meatwad and George Lowe talking about selling autographs and things like that. George is holding up two photographs, and Bob Pettit tells me that these are the actual kind of photographs that George Lowe would have when he would do conventions and things like that. So there's just a picture of him, a headshot of him, and then one of Space Ghost Coast to Coast that he's holding, and Meatwad's kind of surprised by the price on these. Although I did look it up, and $20 in 2006 is the equivalent of $31.11 in buying power in 2024. So that's a fair bit, I guess, for an autograph. But I don't know. I've never been to a convention, so maybe that's relatively cheap. I have no clue. I love Shake's joke of, "Would you please be quiet while I'm chainsawing?" Like, that chainsaw is so freaking loud, and they're trying to talk over it, but that's breaking Shake's concentration. But regardless, like it all played out in the clip, Frylock tells Shake they have every channel up here, including pay-per-view. Shake, he's coming on up as well. However, when Shake gets there, Frylock isn't there to greet him. Instead, he is met by the two aliens who will pull back a curtain, the same one seen at the beginning of this episode and in Hypnogerm, and they will hand him a cardboard cutout of a TV-like exterior, basically, making it look like Shake is in the TV. He's the entertainment now. We also see Frylock. He's all tied up.
Ugh. All right, where's the TV?
You are the TV!
But where is the show?
You are the show! Let the entertainment happen! Begin!
Wait, where's Frylock?
Shake, it's a trick. They use me to get to you. They want you to entertain them forever.
So you may be left very confused here. Like, Frylock knocked the aliens out. How suddenly is he tied up while the aliens are there for Shake? Well, we're going to see very quickly in our next clip now. Frylock wasn't actually tied up. He wasn't in danger. However, this whole business about the aliens wanting Shake to entertain them forever surprisingly is true. They did want that, and Frylock helped them out with the plan.
Yeah, I told him it was a pretty good idea, so I helped him.
Well, where the hell are you going?
Oh, I was acting. You know, like on TV.
No, it's pretty good acting.
Here are your 40 Yorlocks. Use them wisely.
On George Lowe's autograph.
You can get two for that.
Or a sketch and a hand job.
So I love this callback here to that little scene with Meatwad and George Lowe, especially the sketch and a hand job bit. I like when Shake concedes to Frylock, like, oh, well, that was good acting. It's fun whenever, as self-absorbed of an asshole that Shake is, he does occasionally admit when he likes something that somebody else did, and he always does it in that kind of tone, and it's very funny to me, particularly because they're using this egomaniac character in a way that you don't expect him to be used. But Frylock gets paid for helping out here. He gets his 40 Yorlocks. I looked up the Yorlock. I could not find it as a reference to anything, so I'm guessing that Matt and Dave made this up, or it's just something from their personal lives. But a Google search only revealed this episode of Aqua Teen. But to visually convey the Yorlocks, it's basically these floating, glowing cubes that just spin around in a circle. I reached out to Aqua Teen animators, compositors, everything else you can imagine visually almost, Nathan Cherney and Joshua Mullinax, about working on this one. Because that was one of my questions. Like, did you guys come up with that, or was that in the script? Like, did Matt and Dave have an idea for the Yorlock? Unfortunately, neither of them were able to get back to me on that. But I do have a little bit from Nathan Cherney about his connection to Mike Judge, because I asked both of them as well, hey, like, do you guys particularly like Mike Judge? Were you inspired by his work? And Nate had this to say. Nate said, as for Mike Judge and Beavis and Butthead, the series hit its popularity right around when I was starting high school. So yes, I was a huge fan of that show. Huge is all capital, by the way. It probably molded my sense of humor way more than I'd like to admit. In fact, I've snuck a Beavis Easter egg into my everyday life. I've got a shirt in my wardrobe with Beavis as the Great Cornholio, and it's close in color to Beavis's powder blue Metallica shirt. So, whenever I wear it, I pair it with gray pants as a nod to Beavis's outfit. I'm not sure anyone has ever noticed. So that's from Nate Cherney, just a hugely important person to Aqua Teen, on the influence of Beavis and Butthead on him. Nate joined on in Aqua Teen in 2003 for that season, and has gone on to do so much on the show, so it's cool to see this connection, because growing up, I liked Beavis and Butthead whenever I could catch it. I really liked the 2011 season that they did, too. I thought that was really good. I haven't seen a whole lot of the new ones, but it's cool to see here when one show that you really like influences a show that you love. If Nate or Josh do get back to me on this episode, I'll throw it on the end here and update you in a future episode. But still, thanks to Nate for that cool connection between Beavis and Butthead and Aqua Teen. So, in a normal episode of Aqua Teen, it would be over. It would have ended on that hand job joke that they were saying to Master Shake. But we're going to get a first for Aqua Teen right now, because we have another clip. Normally we wouldn't, and the credits are playing over this clip. Visually, we're in Carl's house. Again, it's filled with blood. And Carl, at this point, can't even stand up. His head is so huge, he's just pulled backwards. His head is basically touching the ground, and it's even more disgusting than previously. But he's joined by Frylock, Meatwad, and George Lowe. The three of them all tilting their head backs, their heads all disgustingly gigantic. I mean, if you thought Wayne the Brain McClane was bad in the Super Trivia episode, this is way worse. Very disgusting. Also, floating in the blood, we have some of George Lowe's headshots. And again, they're watching Master Shake on Carl's TV while the credits roll over them.
All right, gang. Well, we've been having some fun, and don't go away.
We'll be right back with the Master Shake Show on every channel.
George.
Global. Worldwide. Every channel. All the friggin' channels, all the friggin' time. Same little cup yapping away.
George, please.
Well, I can do that. It's what I do. And they got this weasel knocking down six figures every Monday. He's taking over the internet, you know. I had a six-figure deal with the internet. Now it's gone.
They're holding him hostage, George. It's different, okay?
Well, it's not different when he's a star. I mean, they took my picture down at the barbecue joint, Frylock, and they put his up.
Hey, Frylock, what's a hand job? Because I'm about to get one.
Meatwad, because I'm about to get one. He, of course, is holding up his Yorlocks at that point. It seems like he bought some of the sketches from George Lowe, and he's about to get his hand job. Good for him. That clip does open with Master Shake kind of like in his somewhat of a bent over kind of sleeping position, and the aliens, they come and hit him with a broomstick, and that wakes him up to start entertaining again. And I love George Lowe just complaining. That's all he does in this episode, really, is complains about where his career is and how other people's careers are doing better than his. And again, you have to assume that there is some basis in reality here, like George Lowe is just going off. And they maybe repurposed it here. Maybe they wanted him to do that. I'm not entirely sure. But again, we have the credits rolling over that, so there's no traditional song while the credits play. Now, in previous episodes, for example, Season 2, Episode 1's Super Birthday Snake, Season 1, Episode 9's MCP Pants, like, they'll play other songs occasionally during the outro, but this, I think, is the first time that we have the characters, like, a scene still going on with the characters while the credits are playing over top, because, you know, I guess they just had too much to fit into this episode. And this ending is important. Like, they needed to show this last scene because this explains the beginning of the episode when we open in on Shake basically doing some performance, and then he's explaining, like, yeah, you know, look at me now. And then he goes on to describe how it all started. That wasn't just nonsense. There's actually a very clever narrative structure throughout this, and it wraps up just very beautifully in a way that a lot of Aqua Teen episodes don't. Usually they just end with a random joke, but this episode actually had a plot line to it, a surprising one at that. The last thing I want to mention is a giant step back to the very early episodes of Aqua Teen. And this regards Carl's TV. And I remember when we first saw it and I described it, I said something to the effect of like, yeah, it's strange the way that the TV is kind of angled down. Like, that was always strange to me. It always stood out to me. And in my email with Aqua Teen's art director, Bob Pettit, over this episode, he describes that and really clears this up for me. Bob says, Carl's early model projection TV was modeled after one my college roommate had. Wood grain veneer and three big red, blue, and yellow lenses that projected the image onto the screen. I had no idea what a projection TV was. I didn't even know that was a thing. But the idea here being, yes, these lenses projected the color onto the screen, hence the screen being angled down, and also why there's that like pullout thing on the bottom of Carl's TV. And that's what is inside of them, the lenses. So it totally makes sense now. You know, I've been watching this show for 20 years, and I always wondered, what was the deal with that TV? And here Bob is clearing that up for us. And I actually found a picture that looks just like Carl's TV. So I'll put a link to this in the description if you want to see basically what Carl's TV was modeled after. Because again, I had no clue what a projection TV was. I guess they're a bit before my time, dating back to the 80s. So yeah, I never came across one. Turns out I was looking at one on Aqua Teen the entire time. Thanks, Bob. So that is Antenna. Before I give you my thoughts, as always, gotta give you the thoughts that were had the week that it came out over at the Toon Zone forum. Link in the description if you would like to read this thread yourself. User Living Fruit Virus is an Atlanta guy, I think, because he seems to know what he's talking about with this comment. He says, George manages to get a local reference in for us. The nutty guys, Larry and Eric. Larry and Eric, aka the regular guys, used to host a show on WKLS, which George Lowe did the voiceover work for. WKLS was also co-founded by Don Tanzit Kennedy. That's what the K stands for in WKLS. So an unexpected Don Kennedy reference here, Don Kennedy being assisted living Dracula. In Season 1, Episode 3's Bus of the Undead, he's Vegetable Man in Season 1, Episode 4's Mayhem of the Moonanites. George Kennedy always popping up within the Space Ghost and Aqua Teen world. Sadly, passed away last year, but very fun to see this unexpected connection to him via this episode here and George Lowe's rantings within it. The post after that is by user Beat, who says, "Weird but very funny. See, gross out violence can work if done correctly, like here." Which is a very good point and not something that I thought to touch on in the episode is, yes, we do get some gross out humor with Carl. I guess it's also body horror with their heads getting bigger, but also just with blood everywhere, blood squirting out of their noses, their eyes, things like that. But it's done here in this very silly way that, like, the blood itself isn't the joke. It just plays into the joke. So Beat had a very good point there, one that I absolutely agree with. Golgo 13 says, Adult Swim, how long will you keep holding out on us for the George Lowe show? Which, no kidding, man, like, that would have been great. George, he could have done it. He probably could still do it. I don't know why he never just got his own show. Lots of love for this episode in this comment thread, and many people excited that George Lowe is here. In fact, I'm surprised that, like, there's really not much discussion of Mike Judge in being on this episode. Now, that could be because the voice he does here, you know, it's not his Hank Hill voice or his Beavis voice or anything, so people probably didn't know. I mean, I'm sure I'd seen this episode without knowing that as well, and I never would have guessed that was Mike Judge. But everyone here excited about George Lowe. They think he saved the episode. But I did find this interesting string of comments that relates to something that I said previously. Mr. Ralph says, is it just me or did Frylock sound different this episode? And then Classic Speedy comes in saying, it's not you. He was a lot more mellow, like he was back in the very first episodes. It was weird to watch that. Then the episode The comes on right afterwards where he had more energy and is pissed off in his demeanor. So this is an interesting observation, I guess not only because it affirms mine, but that is true because when we went through the lineup for this night, the episode The came on right after with Frylock yelling and being very big. It's a very Frylock-centric episode. And Antenna kind of is too in a way. We get a decent amount of Frylock here, but he just is just mellow is a good way to put it, like the language they've used here. He's just a lot more pulled back, I guess. So again, not really sure why that is. So moving on to my thoughts on this one, because I know I'd seen this one at some point. Like I don't think I did not see this episode before the last few years, but it was never really one I was that interested in. But certainly doing this podcast episode helped with that and just realizing who this crazy voice talent on this episode was with Mike Judge, Will Forte, and George Lowe. So this is an episode that I came around to appreciate a heck of a lot more, but this episode is doing a lot of cool things, especially for not only this spot in Aqua Teen's release history, but also for Aqua Teen as a whole. So to explain that, what I mean by this spot in Aqua Teen's release history is that this is kind of like playing with that old Aqua Teen classic formula, again, of like there's these monsters come to the Aqua Teens by means of this tower over Carl's house. Frylock eventually has to figure out what's going on. He solves it, but the episode doesn't really end with the aliens being destroyed, but it ends in its own Aqua Teen way. Remember, season one, episode one's Rabot. The Aqua Teens don't stop the Rabot. They're just like, well, we can't go downtown anymore. Like, that's basically how that ends. And that's very similar to here, where we have the characters just watching this show, even though they all know it's bad for them, but they're watching it. Their heads are huge. There's blood everywhere. It's kind of a nihilistic ending, but still a funny one. Like, they don't play it nihilistically, but it kind of is if you think about it. And then to this episode doing something new just for Aqua Teen is with the setup of the episode. We open in on Shake doing that performance, then we get some voiceover, and you think it's random, but it's really not, because it does explain the episode of how he got that gig on TV. Initially, when you first see the episode, you're like, yeah, bullshit, he's making this up. There's no way he's on TV. But he does end up on TV by the end of the episode. So some very interesting narrative stuff at play here. But also with the fact that we have the credits rolling over an additional scene, a scene we otherwise would not have gotten if they didn't do that, right? Like, they couldn't have just added extra time to the episode, so they had to interlink it with the credits in that way. So this episode doing a lot of cool stuff. Also just the fact that all the Aqua Teens and Carl get some good moments here. I mean, it's a pretty Frylock-centric episode, but we do get some great stuff from the other ones. Nothing feels shoehorned in. I love the 2 minutes of George Lowe randomly in the middle of the episode. And again, towards the end. I mean, he just carries so much. I'm sure it's... I don't know if I want to say it's easy for Matt and Dave, but to get a guy like George Lowe on, who's who's just going to, he's going to keep coming up with stuff without much of a problem. So that's always cool to see. So this episode, really fun. I grew to enjoy this one a lot more. I think I have to give this one 4 Yorlocks out of 5. Like, it's a fun time. There were no moments I thought dragged. I never found it boring. To be completely honest with you, I think I am a tiny bit bummed that the Mike Judge parts, like, you can't even tell it's him, but at the same time, what else is he supposed to do, right? Do, you know, like a Hank Hill voice? It doesn't make any sense. But overall, a super fun episode and a nice return to form for Aqua Teen in a season that has been just very different from the seasons before it. And that is something we will see finishing this season up. We still have Ezekiel and Carl Wash. Those are a bit more run-of-the-mill Aqua Teen episodes. And I say that in the best way possible because I love both of those episodes and I'm very excited to get to both of them. But that is it for me this week. Thanks for hanging out, talking teens. Thank you to Bob Pettit and Nathan Cherney for helping with this one. Thank you to Facky and Joshua for signing up to the Patreon. Again, that is patreon.com/dancingisforbidden. If you like this podcast, if you'd like me to keep doing it, that is the best way to support this show. It goes without saying thank you to everybody signed up over there, especially our Highlander, Nick.
There can be only one!
There's only one time in Aqua Teen so far that we've had credits rolling over an episode, just like there's only one Nick. And of course, shout outs to our number one in the Hood G tier patrons, Sean, Ian, Captain Buford, Robison, Jason, Lecheretone69, Empower706, SwimWiki, Lervinator, Tegan, Thorin the Grumpy Dwarf, Garrick, and Jonathan. You guys can get yourself a sketch and a hand job any day of the week. I'll see you March 25th when we dive into Ezekiel. Until then, keep it cool, take it easy. Bye-bye.
Okay, recording, and now.
Space Ghost isn't home right now.
Is there something I can help you with?
Okay, there you go.
It's not for Space Ghost, it's for me.
Did you want... Oh, I thought
no,
you wanted...
I want one for me.
Sultar isn't home right now, leave a message. Beep.
No.
Okay.
My name's Moltar.
Moltar.
Yeah, and say some stuff about fire this time.
Moltar isn't home right now. Fire, fire, leave a message.
Wait, I wanted one with Butthead.
Another one?
Yeah.
Hey, do one for me.
Okay, who's it for?
Zorak.
Do him and me.
Me and him.
Yeah, and make it funny this time.
Zorak isn't here. Moltar isn't here. Leave a message.
No, make it funny.
Zorak and Moltar.
Moltar.
Forget it.
No.
What's his name to do a message for you?
Sit down, you gore-bellied, rump-fed footlicker. We're not done yet.